Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
January 8th, 2008. The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, Katrine's Killer ACR Tips. Welcome back to another Digital Story. This show is coming to you from Tampa, Florida, where Imaging USA is holding its annual PPA, Imaging USA Show for Photographers. Lots of great speakers, lots of really interesting stuff, for me anyway, going on in the Adobe-sponsored track where we have speakers such as Katrine Eisman and Seth Resnick, and I've learned a lot of stuff. Now, what I want to do today is pass along some of my favorite things that I've learned at the show. I have my notes right here. I'll even rustle some papers for you. This is a poor man's sound effects, right? And I also have by my side here Katrine's new book, The Creative Digital Darkroom. She wrote this along with Sean Dugan. This is an excellent book. It just came out. It's from O'Reilly Media, is the publisher. And this book contains almost everything that I'm going to talk about today. I have one tip on black and white conversion that she actually figured out after she finished the book. So I have some tips from the book that she talked about in class. And actually in classes, I went to two of her classes. And then also we have the bonus tip that you can only get when you listen to Katrine or listen to this show right here. So let me start out by sort of framing the picture here. We're photographers. We like to frame things. I'm going to frame this picture. So I'm talking about Adobe Camera Raw, 4 point, whatever the version happens to be when you listen to this podcast, which is a version that ships, that comes bundled with Adobe Photoshop CS3. So it's the latest version of Photoshop CS3. Unless you're listening to this podcast way in the future, which would be when you're listening to it, the show was recorded way in the past, and I'm not even going to think about that anymore. So at any rate, Photoshop CS3, that comes with Bridge 2.0, and some version of Adobe Camera Raw that starts with a 4. And the reason why we're focusing on this version of Adobe Camera Raw is because it is so much more powerful and so much more elegant than any of the previous versions of Adobe Camera Raw. And in fact, photographers can use Adobe Camera Raw to do the bulk of their initial processing. And on a lot of images, they can stop right there. You can just stop right at Adobe Camera Raw. You don't even have to go into Photoshop. Now, Adobe Camera Raw isn't just for RAW files anymore. That's actually one of the changes that came about with version 4. Yes, it's great for RAW files, and it can process most RAW files that are out there, but it can also do JPEGs and TIFFs. And in fact, it's a great processor for JPEGs because you have things that you don't have in other places other than Lightroom, sliders such for clarity and vibrance and stuff like that. So this is a terrific tool that we now have as part of our Photoshop bundle. Now, one of the questions that I get a lot when I'm teaching workflow and so forth, well, when do I use Adobe Camera Raw? When do I use Photoshop? And I think it's really a great place to start. And Katrine actually handled this quite well. Now, no one asked her this question. She was just ready for it. So what she says is, that Camera Raw can make a lot of images look very, very good and underscore a lot. So it's a global editor. It's something that you can use when you have 400 shots and you want to bring them up to at least work print status or higher quickly. And one of the things, of course, that Adobe Camera Raw allows you to do is that if you have an edit that you have to make on maybe the whole shoot, let's say a white balance correction or something like that, you can load all of the images at once into Adobe Camera Raw, usually from Bridge. You select them all, bring them into Adobe Camera Raw. They all sort of line up there as thumbnails on the left side of the interface. And then go ahead and color correct, let's say, the first image in that whole batch. Get it the way that you want. And then you can select the rest of the images in that batch, those thumbnails, and you can synchronize. And by synchronizing, then, and when you synchronize, you can choose what you want to synchronize. You can only choose, for example, the white balance setting and maybe not do the other stuff. For instance, if you've done some cropping on some of these before you brought them into Adobe Camera Raw, you can say, oh, I don't want to crop them. I just want to synchronize the white balance setting. And then Adobe Camera Raw will basically batch process the rest of those images for you. It's really fast, it's very easy, and it allows you to work on a bunch of stuff in a very timely, efficient way. Now, you can, you know, as a side note to this, you could select 30 images all at once in Adobe Camera Raw, have them all selected, and then as you're making the changes, let's say a white balance, a temperature change, it could apply that to all 30 images at once. What happens is, and the reason why I don't recommend it, and neither does Katrine, actually, is because it really is a draw on your computer and things seem to slow down to a crawl. So I think it's much better to find an image that's a representative image of the batch, get it the way that you want, and then synchronize with the rest of the images. Now, Photoshop, on the other hand, is really now, in today's workflow, designed to make one image look perfect. Adobe Camera Raw can make, you know, your whole shoot look really, really good. And then if you have a couple real winners, portfolio pieces that you want to make look perfect, then you bring those into Photoshop from Adobe Camera Raw and you finish them off with localized edits, layers, and things of that nature. So that's the distinction. So Adobe Camera Raw is very much at the front of your post-processing workflow where you get to do a lot of work very quickly. Photoshop now, for a lot of photographers, is a little later in the workflow and something that we tend to go to only for a few images. Definitely, we're not running all of our images through Photoshop anymore because it just isn't as efficient as Adobe Camera Raw. A couple of the tips that I have or techniques that I have actually are on the capture side of the equation. And again, this is important, and this is something that I was really happy to hear Katrine advocating in her classes. It's something that I feel very strongly about, which is the better you do on the capture side, the less work you have to do on the post-production side. And both of us hate the phrase, well, I'll just fix it later in Photoshop. No, you don't really want to do that unless you have a lot more time than I do. Because if you shoot so that you're depending on fixing things in Photoshop, it is not an efficient workflow at all. And sometimes you might not even be able to get as good a result as if you're starting with something that's captured well. Now, along those lines, I think there's some misconception about white balance setting. And some photographers are using gray cards. They'll put a gray card in the first shot, and they'll say, well, then I can white balance on that later in post-production. I just want to note that, you know, gray cards in the digital world, in the digital photography world, are really for exposure. They will help you set a good exposure or correct the exposure later. But they're not so good in Adobe Camera Raw in particular for setting the proper color temperature, or at least using auto color temperature in Adobe Camera Raw. What you really want to use is just find any neutral area in the image. And a lot of times they look for a white area or a grayish area that has some detail. And then you just use the auto color correct and click on that. And that will usually get you what you want. But you don't need to put a gray card in your shot to do that. Now, if you wanted to put a Macbeth color checker in the shot where you have, you know, like a nice white square and a nice black square and so forth, you could do that. But a lot of times, all you have to do is find a neutral area that has some detail, some texture, click on that, and you'll get, if you don't hit it right on the nail, you'll get very close with auto color correct. So gray cards are for exposure. Okay, they're not for doing post-production white balance. Now, another thing about why we're on the capture side of things, talking about exposure, is that generally speaking now, the way that the cameras are designed, the digital cameras, is that you do want to overexpose when shooting RAW a little bit. And the rule of thumb that I go by right now, and Katrine actually uses the same rule of thumb, is that on a bright day where you have lots of light, you just overexpose by about a third of a stop. If it's a cloudy day and there isn't much contrast, you might want to overexpose by two-thirds of a stop. And you can just set your exposure compensation and just put it at plus one-third or plus two-thirds. And the reason being is that it's a lot easier now with the tools that we have in post-production and the way that the cameras are designed. It's a lot easier to recover a little bit of highlight detail than it is to recover shadow detail. What happens a lot of times if we have to recover shadow detail consistently is that our shots are going to have some noise in those shadow areas. And so, yeah, we have to do it. And when we have to do it, we do it. That's great. But as a rule of thumb, you know, if you can stay away from having to recover out of shadow areas and only maybe just recover a little bit of highlight detail, then I think you're a lot better off and your images will look a lot cleaner. Give it a try with your camera. I mean, these are rules of thumbs. These aren't, you know, chiseled in stone or anything like that. But so one-third over for sunny days and two-thirds over for overcast days. And then use the recovery slider in Adobe Camera Raw and take a look at your images and see what you think. I want to talk about sharpening for a second. And like some of the things that I learned in Katrine's class about sharpening. And she has a nice philosophy. She's studied this and she's thought about it and she's tested it a lot. And basically what she says is that, you know, there's three times that you want to sharpen. You know, at input, and then, of course, some creative sharpening, and then at output. Now, at input, all you're really trying to do is offset some of the camera's shortcomings, you know, some of the anti-aliasing and things like that that happens as just, you know, as part of digital capture. So the input sharpening is you're just trying to bring the image back to where it should be, and probably not much more. And then later on, when you're working on the image, it's an image that you want to fine tune, then chances are you want to do some creative sharpening. And that could be, for instance, where you're just sharpening, let's say, eyes and eyelashes of a portrait, but not necessarily the skin tones. So that would be an example of creative sharpening. And then finally, when you go to print, and especially when you're printing your own stuff, output sharpening, that's another time where you want to add a little bit of sharpening before it goes out through the printer, again, to basically compensate for the shortcomings in the printing process, you know, of basically ink hitting paper. So three times that you could possibly sharpen input creatively and output. Now, right now, I'm going to talk about input sharpening, and this is the sharpening, again, that we use to sort of offset the shortcomings of digital capture, and there are some very nice tools in Adobe Camera Raw that allow us to sharpen well. You basically have four sliders for sharpening in Adobe Camera Raw. You have amount, radius, detail, and masking. Now, amount is the one I think that we're probably most familiar with, the one that we probably use the most, and it's also the coarsest of the four sliders. With amount, basically, you slide it over to the right, and it sharpens, in a sense, the edges of the lines in your picture. You got to be careful with it because you can definitely over sharpen an image. And this is very true when it comes to the portraits and so forth. Most people recommend, and Katrine, I think, is in this camp also, that the amount setting for an image that you're sharpening, if it's a portrait, you want to keep it, let's say, between 25 and 75. Don't really want to go much more than that. If you do, I think you're not going to be happy with the results. Whereas architecture and landscape and things like that, I think you have a little bit more latitude and you can move your amount from, let's say, 75 up to 150. Again, keep an eye on things. And generally speaking, when you're doing input sharpening, you want to be at 100%. For the image. You want to be looking at it at 100% because that will give you the best feel for what's happening. And also there's another reason for that I'll get to in a minute. Now the radius, of course, what it does is it finds an edge and then exaggerates it. And so radius you usually want to keep, low. And especially if you have an image with a lot of detail. So we're talking about, you know, radius is set to 1.0, and 1.5, sometimes even 0.5. So generally speaking, you want to keep your radius low, but you can put your amount up higher. Detail, you know, it sort of decreases or lowers the values of the sharpening. Now, detail is an area that I still don't completely understand. I mean, in terms of explaining to you what really goes on. But what I can say is that when the radius is high, if you do push that radius up 1.5, 2.0, you know, into areas like that where you're exaggerating edges, that I've noticed that if you lower the detail setting, if you bring the detail down a little bit, it sort of gives you the feel, the sharpening that you want, that gives you the feel that you want, but sort of offsets some of those artifacts that you don't want. So as the radius goes up, as you move the radius up, you might want to offset some of the bad parts of moving the radius up by moving the detail down a little bit. But my favorite new thing that I learned in class, and this was something I didn't know, had to do with the masking slider. And so if you're working at 100%, what you can do is hold down the Option key or the Alt key, Option for Mac, Alt for Windows, and then click on the masking slider. And as you do that, you will actually see Photoshop will show you a mask. And then as you move the slider to the right, it will find edges, essentially. So for instance, if you're working on something that has a lot of sky in it, but you have buildings in the foreground, really what you want to do is sharpen the buildings. You don't want to so much sharpen the sky, because by sharpening the sky, all you're really going to do is increase noise. That's something you don't want. So in this case, if you're working at 100%, you hold down the Option key or the Alt key, and you slide the slider to the right, what you'll see is Photoshop will create, or Adobe Camera Raw will create a mask for the things that don't have edges, such as the sky, and that won't get sharpened with the amount and the radius and the detail sliders. This is very cool because it allows you to really only sharpen the things that you want to sharpen and not sharpen the things that you don't. And of course, this is a lot harder if you're working on Photoshop, if you're creating these masks on your own. Whereas here, all you really have to do is hold down the Option key and move a slider, and you can create a mask that a lot of times will do exactly what you need it to do and avoid the things that you don't want to have happen. And this is one of my favorite tips. You know, there's always one or two things that you come away with from a show where you just go, that alone was worth going to Tampa for. And in my case, learning how to use this masking slider was one of that. Now, she covers this, by the way. Katrine covers this in the Creative Digital Darkroom. So if you really want to get into it and you just don't sort of want my top of mind explanation, then take a look at the book and see what you think. This is a great tip that will allow you to work quickly and not have to get into Photoshop and spend a lot of time creating masks. Now, I have a bonus tip for you also, and this is a tip that isn't in the book, in that Katrine has just figured out recently and talked about it today, and I haven't had a chance to fully test it yet, but I'm going to pass it along to you. And it has to do with converting images to black and white inside Adobe Camera Raw. Now, the way that I had been doing it is I go to HSL tab, Hue, Saturation, and Luminance, and I check the box, Convert to Grayscale, and then I move the sliders until the image looks the way that I want, and off I go. And I have to say, I've gotten pretty good results with that and have liked some of the prints that I've made. Now, what Katrine talked about today was that she kept noticing that when she used that method that she was getting a little bit more noise as part of the conversion than she liked, especially, of course, in the areas where we always see noise, which is in the sky and in the shadow areas. So she started playing around a little bit, and what she's done now, and I'm going to give you this tip now, is a little bit different than just check the box, convert to grayscale. It's also a little bit more work, not too much more work, but it's enough more work that you might want to create, once you do this once, you might want to create a preset for this, which you can do for anything practically that you do in Adobe Camera. Create a preset for it, and then all you have to do is hit the preset instead of moving all the sliders around. So she goes to the HSL tab, just where we were before, but instead she goes to Saturation, opens up Saturation in HSL, and she moves all the sliders all the way to the left to, I believe it's negative 100. Moves them all the way to the left. And then what she does is that she plays with the temperature slider and plays with the luminance sliders for each of the color channels until she gets the image the way that she wants. And she was able to create some very dramatic variations just by moving the temperature slider in the luminance sliders. It was very nice. Now, the advantage to this is, of course, that you haven't converted it to grayscale. It's really, you know, just a regular RGB file, and so that you have all of your color controls available to you. So, for instance, if you did need to do noise reduction, you haven't really introduced any noise, but if you had noise to begin with, then you could use, you know, the color slider in the noise reduction area, and it would work on this particular image. I'm looking forward to testing out. You might want to test it out too. You know, maybe take an image, especially an image that has shadow areas or sky or whatever. Do one conversion by clicking on the grayscale, adjust it the way that you want, and then do another conversion, moving all the saturations down to a negative 100, and then playing with the temperature and the luminance sliders. And then, you know, blow them up to 100% and put them, look at an area where you typically would see noise, put them side by side and see what you get. I think it has potential. I'm going to give it a try, and I'm going to make some prints too, which is, you know, always a fun way to make these comparisons. So those are my killer tips that I'm passing along from Katrine Eisman from her book, The Creative Digital Darkroom, which you can get on Amazon. You can go to O'Reilly.com and buy the book. And then Katrine also has a site that she's going to maintain that continues the conversation going with things from the book. And also, I think you can download example files and so forth there. And that site is creativedigitaldarkroom.com. That's creativedigitaldarkroom.com. You might want to go and take a look. And I have a podcast interview with Katrine that I recorded just a while back that I'll be putting up on O'Reilly's digital media site later this month. I'll post a link to it from the digital story so that you know when it goes up. It'll probably go up in about 2 weeks. And of course, all of that stuff happens over on digitalmedia.oreilly.com. A couple of URLs there for you, creativedigitaldarkroom.com. That's Katrine's site that will support this book and give you some bonus goodies. And then digitalmedia.oreilly.com. Okay, let's cover a couple other things real quick. First, I want to thank our sponsors for this show and Boink Software, the makers of Photomagico, the best software in the world for creating slideshows, and it's for the Mac. And Lopro, the makers of fine gear for photographers on the go. Everything from little pouches for your digital devices all the way up to the slickest camera bags in the world. Lopro is a new sponsor of Digital Story, and we're tickled to have them aboard. And then ExpoDisc from Expo Imaging, and I think still the best way to use the custom white balance setting on your camera. All of these guys have tiles on the Digital Story. If you haven't gone over there, check them out. Click on the tile, and it'll take you right to where you want to go. Our photo assignment for this month, for January 2008, is Edges, and I've already got some good stuff in. So I think this is going to be a fun assignment. Put your thinking caps on, and remember there's edges literally, you know, like the edge of, you know, a table kind of thing. And then there's, the not so literal approach, you know, edges of sanity, edges of the day, that kind of stuff. So there's lots of fun that I think you can have with this photo assignment. Keep those grab shots rolling in. I'm starting to get a few more again. I'm going to keep running them. One of my favorite parts of the Digital Story, if you're sitting on a grab shot, send that in. And most of all, have fun with your pictures here. Think about, if you have Photoshop CS3, using Adobe Camera Raw a little bit more and investigate some of its possibilities. And if you need help with that, of course, Katrine's book, The Creative Digital Darkroom, will help you. And most importantly, go take pictures and then, in parentheses, send me some of your favorite ones. Okay, that's it for this week. Next week, I'm in San Francisco for Macworld. That's going to be a blast. If you're around, make sure you come by and say hi. My schedule's posted on the Digital Story event calendar. And hopefully I have an announcement for you next week, too. And I'll probably be recording from Macworld next week. So good stuff. January's a busy month. After that, we have PMA. So stay tuned, and I'll try to keep you informed. Bye-bye now.
your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.